Peter Welch, you've just been put onto the Democratic Steering Committee in the House of Representatives. That's big stuff, isn't it?
Well, you know, a lot of people around here like to pretend they're powerful, but really, the key that you need to be effective is you've got to be energetic. The Steering Committee does make committee appointments. It's in consultation with the Speaker.
Sure.
Or the minority leader, of course, that's Nancy Pelosi. So it is an honor. It is an important committee. But really, to get the work done around here, what I'm finding is that more important than seniority, more important than anything, is your energy and your ability to work with your colleagues, both Republican and Democrat. But it is a great honor to be on that committee, and I'll try to use it to get more things done for Vermont.
Go from Vermont to the Middle East. What's going on?
Well, you know, what's obviously going on is that whole region is in a state of enormous turmoil, and it's making the transition from what had been very autocratic, oppressive, one-man rule-style, military-dominated governments in Libya, Syria, of course, Egypt, into a new place. And the question is, what will that new place be?
Indeed.
Will it be democratic and participatory? Will one, in effect, dictatorship be displaced by another? Will it be a radical Islamic government that imposes its own will on its people and denies them freedom? Or will it have genuine democratic participation? And it's a time of great turmoil and a time of great danger. And it ranges from, you know, the heartbreaking suffering of people in Syria who were under the assault of their own Syrian government. I mean, the killing and the dying that's occurring there is just tragic. But the rebel forces are clearly gaining a lot of strength and getting now recognition from the international community, including the United States. To Libya, where in Tunisia, where it's still very much in a state of flux, but it's much more peaceful in the aftermath of their own governmental transition. So this is a time of enormous complexity and enormous internal ferment in each one of the countries in the Middle East. There's great consequences not just to the United States, but to the prospects of any kind of Middle East deal with or peace agreement between the Palestinians and Israel, and also the stability of a very important region in the country.
Well, you know, you're on a subcommittee which deals with homeland defense, foreign operations, and national security. So I wanted to ask you a question about that. If we back the wrong horse here, we could be fighting al-Qaeda as a primary enemy of the United States, and yet in some of these coalitions, these guys are playing a big part.
Well, that's true. And see, this is what is so complex about it. When you have instability, it creates opportunistic possibilities for all kinds of actors. And it can be good actors, you know, their equivalent of Thomas Jefferson, or it can be bad actors, advocates of Osama bin Laden-style violence. And it's a very, very dangerous situation because it is so unstable, and people who are unscrupulous and have their own anti-democratic objectives will try to exploit it. And what I think Congress has to do is be supportive of a flexibility for the administration to try to manage in as best a way as we can, but not have the illusion that we can micromanage. I mean, what's going to happen in these countries has much more to do with the decades, if not centuries, histories in those countries of tribal divisions, of their own forms of autocratic government, and of their own traditions. And it'll have what happens there is a product much more of that than anything that the President of the United States does. On the other hand, we are influential, and we want to have the president use our authority wisely. But, you know, every time something happens, let's not have the illusion that there's some specific action we could have taken that would have changed everything.
So if you look at the whole picture, Are you afraid of the potential results?
Well, sure. I'm quite apprehensive. But, you know, my view on this is the world we're in, and we've got to deal with it.
Sure.
And our goal is to be a constructive supporter of those democratic forces in each of these countries that wants democratic participation and reform. So, sure, all of us are worried, but it's not as though we can put the genie back in the bottle. And the question for us is, how do we maintain constructive engagement in a situation that's volatile and where, at the end of the day, we don't have control? You know, we can have influence, but not control.
Gotcha. We've talked about Medicare and, you know, your view that this is one of the most successful programs and basically that it ain't going anywhere. But what about Social Security? I know that for a long time there was this movement on the Republicans' part to privatize Social Security, set up Social Security accounts, give their friends some more access to our money. And then came the downturn and we all said, oh, boy, if that had worked, imagine where we would all be.
We'd be so devastated. I mean, this country... We wouldn't have our social safety net if we had done that. We'd have all squandered on the dot-com bust and then on the housing bust.
Is Social Security in any trouble, or is it off the table?
Social Security is solid. And I can't say absolutely for certain whether it's in any kind of discussion between the president and the speaker, but I think it is off the table, and it should be off the table. Off the table as a component of discussions about the budget deficit, because Social Security does not contribute to that budget deficit. Now, we're always eager to make certain that Social Security is solvent, and the goal of solvency is that it's solid for 75 years, and it's got a shorter time horizon of solvency than that. So there are many of us who are willing to sit down and say, all right, what do we have to do, much like Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill did in 1984, to make sure we've got that 75-year horizon? And, you know, I think the proposal that would get the most support around here would be to raise the cap on wages subject to the Social Security tax. I mean, we could add a lot of years of solvency if we boosted that up, and it's actually at a relatively low level compared to where it's been in the past.
The Democrats are for it, the Republicans are against it, or is that too simplistic?
Yeah, I think it's a little too simplistic. There's been a lot of The Republicans, I think, did pay a big electoral price with their advocacy for privatization. And people kind of get it that Social Security, they pay money into it. It's a retirement plan that all of us contribute to. And then when we start getting money out of it, we're just getting back what we paid for. So the challenge here is about maintaining its solvency, because we do have a demographic bubble here with a lot of people retiring. You know, it's like 10,000 people every day turning 65. So that's a challenge, but it should be addressed solely within the framework of what do we need to do to guarantee the continued solvency of Social Security. And we make some relatively minor adjustments, we can accomplish that.
Peter Welch, we always love talking to you. We always learn something from you. Peter Welch, of course, is a Democrat at large, the only congressman from Vermont in office since 2007. Good luck, Peter.
Thanks, Alan. Same to you. Bye-bye.